Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I am Cooper, and with me I have...
Hey, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And today we are talking about the penultimate episode of Season 1, Relevé, which is not very well pronounced in French for me.
Relevé.
Yeah. There was a whole lot of internet suggestions on how to pronounce it. Oh. I've done my best here, folks.
I only know the dance term is relevé. I wasn't sure if it was different for the culinary term, but apparently it is. It is not.
Apparently, it's also a term that's not widely used anymore, and referred to a dish that is basically an entree replacing another dish.
Mm.
And we see a lot of that in this episode.
Yeah.
So it felt very relevant.
Relevant, relevé.
You like that? This episode was directed by Michael Reimer, who has directed two episodes this season, both the mushroom episode.
Ooh.
And the episode where we meet Miriam Lass and Eddie Izzard's character for the first time. The flashback-heavy episode.
Episode.
It's written by Chris Brancato and Brian Fuller. Chris Brancato has not yet written an episode. I'm not sure if he writes for the next season. I haven't been able to go over my notes for next season's scripts. Tonight we are drinking Girl and Dragon Malbec from Argentina.
And it chose Girl and the Dragon because that is the painting that is in Red Dragon.
Girl clothed in the sun, right?
Yeah, the Red Dragon and the girl clothed in the sun.
So it's a very topical wine. Mm. And we've got heaping glasses of it.
Yes.
We do.
Heaping.
I don't drink out of small glasses.
No. Well, why would you? No. Why would anyone?
No, Ophelia's, the way she attacks wine is go big or go home.
And, you know, Ophelia was just on the Televerse podcast, which released this week. The Televerse podcast birthed This Is My Design podcast, which is the Hannibal podcast that inspired me to do a Hannibal podcast, so it was very cool.
Indeed.
So what were you doing on there?
I was giving my forensic spiel and got to geek out about turnaround times with DNA analysis and fingerprinting, and because their background is more in the television or the musical background, so they knew very little about the forensics that are seen on Hannibal, and they were also they didn't know about the conflict that seems so convenient to propel plots, where there's this sort of disconnect between a police officer or police department and the FBI.
Oh, the FBI versus locals.
Yes, and that is absolutely a thing.
And we really only saw it in Hannibal in episode 2, I think, with the mushrooms, because that's really the only time local police have been actively involved in an investigation.
Well, they do refer to who's been in here. Have the cops touched anything?
Who ruined everybody?
Who ruined this whole scene before we got a chance to get our people in here? But yeah, that's the type of thing we're discussing. It's basically
very cool.
Forensics.
Awesome.
I got to say the word putrefaction.
Yay!
And nobody got sick.
That you know of.
Oh, we did discuss the improbability of the totem also.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. They might have been off the, you know, on mute when I said the word. But I was talking about how that not just the sheer size requiring strength and agility and whatnot, but that the body would not stay like that.
It would
defrost and fall apart in the most horrendous of piles. In reality, so yeah, we discussed.
Well, we have discussed that the totem is
the
least likely
least
of the.
They went too far. With
they
that
did.
One.
They did. They did. However, they did really nicely with the mushrooms.
I agree. The mushrooms was quite interesting.
That is actually something I could see happening, depending on what part of the cycle of decomp the P people were in.
Well, I want to talk about the acting. Because this, you know, we talk a lot about the machinations of plot.
Yes.
And it sort of, I feel like we haven't really discussed, I know I haven't said the name Mads Mikkelsen in quite a few episodes.
True.
And it's with the implication that he's doing the same tremendous job that he has done thus far.
Mm-hmm. We haven't crossed the line on any of the characters and discussing them as from their act. We're really delving into
their characters. I think Casey Rawl is really the one that I single out. But I do want to emphasize how spectacular Hugh Dancy and
Mads Mikkelsen are. Amazing.
His portrayal of mental illness and fever and what would actually be happening when you have encephalitis is spot on. Mm. I mean, he is doing that well. And I don't know if he's watched medical movies of patients or how he's gotten access to that information, but he's doing it.
He's also British.
I also feel like at any point doing an American accent.
Mm-hmm.
That's true too.
Yeah, which is really always impressive when you see no hints.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, like House and Hugh Laurie's performance. You see no hints whatsoever of his Britishness, so that when you see him British, it's almost mind-blowing.
Right. Because I've seen Hugh Dancy on the news when he's talking about the show.
Yeah.
And so hard to believe that is the same person that's in the show. Because he really, truly embodies a whole new character
when he's playing
this character. When you see him on an interview show outside of shooting this show, it's almost like he's stepped out, you know, of the character.
This episode really, I think, showcased our two leads tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
We see things unraveling. You know, Will got to play really big last episode. Hugh Dancy got to play really big, and the extremism of the encephalitis and the fever he was surviving. You know, he got to do seizure. He got to do
flip out, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's great about this one is he's back from that.
Yes.
So he's back to Will.
He took himself out of the hospital,
having severe problems, especially late in the episode.
Yeah, episodes where he's losing time and dream world and real world is becoming, there's no way of him to really know. He's imagining himself doing things and then being thrust back into the real world. But oddly, seamlessly.
Yeah.
Because he has sort of that odd vision, but you would thought that after he snapped out of it and realized she was actually standing and was alive in a different place, he didn't stop. Oh my God, where am I? He just started talking.
Right.
Like,
he was just there.
Okay. What I saw is not what I saw. And let's just pretend like it never happened.
He didn't have that external moment at all. He just moved right into,
denial.
We know Jack was right. You know, exactly.
Denial is a powerful thing. The most
impressive thing in this episode, I think, is the sense of betrayal that we see on Will.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Especially when he's alone in the cabin with Abigail.
And he realizes
that Hannibal, his friend, knew about this the whole time. And he loses it because it's severe hurt. He's playing the hurt of his friend doing this. And Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen, he plays so low. He plays barely even registering most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then this episode, you see him going through all sorts of emotional
machinations.
And they're still very low. Mm-hmm. Like, the baseline is here, and he's barely poking above the surface. But for a performance that has thus far been almost monotone, it's so intense and you feel it so much more. Like the moment where he's thinking about what he has to do because Jack is there, and after he gives his concern, Jack leaves, and then he sets his jaw.
Yes.
And you see it in his eyes. It's like, okay, something needs to be done here.
You start to really see within him that the game is no longer his. Anymore. Everyone's starting to figure things out. Things that he thought were nice and neatly tucked away and hidden are now being revealed, in that he can't move them around as yeah. as the pieces that, you know, unaware, you know, chess pieces.
He's not in charge of the game anymore.
Exactly. And but, you really see that, and you see, and it's not like a cool, okay, well, he has a struggle each mm-hmm. time these things happen when he realizes that, you know, that when, that Will is starting to figure things out, that Jack is starting to figure things out, and Abigail, you know, everything, every character, every piece in his little game is starting to realize that they're getting played.
Yeah.
And there is concern, a cool concern, but is a concern of, okay, I have to redesign. I have to redraw.
Yeah, he has to rethink his game.
Rethink his game.
Well, what his whole drive is, I wanted to see what you would do.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And then,
and he's still playing that game.
Depending on what you do and how much he can manipulate you or not manipulate you is what's going to drive his next move to do his next thing and then see what you do.
Right.
Like, he's constantly setting up these, I don't want to say they're traps, but they're trials.
He wants to see his trials.
Are you worthy of his
opinion and attention?
His time, and you know, his opinion about how smart you are, or how, you know, maybe at one point he thought Jack and he obviously likes Will, but just checking their cleverness, like, how clever are you? And if I have this opinion about you, does it hold true? Like, is it just that I saw a glimpse of this in you? Or is this who you really are? And if you are this person, like, you know, Jack's over zealous sort of sense of what's right and what's wrong, well, if that's true, then let's put you in some compromising situations
where we have to test what you do.
Mm-hmm. Will you act unethically to get your way or jack up the law, so to speak, because he puts him in that position?
Maybe the line of dialogue we repeat most.
This is my design, jacking up the law.
Should be a podcast.
I think it, for whatever reason, I go to, like, you know, it's Judas Priest with Breaking the Law. So yeah, jacking up the law. I just like the term, and I'm gonna start using it every time somebody manipulates the law to their will.
You're trying to check up the law.
But he's trying to see what people are going to do. It's this giant game, and we are all the train set. You know, he's putting the tracks down, and he wants to see what's gonna happen. He has an idea of what's going to happen. He thinks he knows, you know, where things are going to go, but every once in a while someone surprises him.
And then he has to rethink it.
He's
got to
reconfigure his tracks.
Reconfigure, exactly. And I think this, I guess being the second to last episode, they're really setting that up.
Yes.
In this. We've kind of seen it. Because we've talked about it.
Yeah.
In a lot of the episodes about how, he just wants to see what he'll do. We kind of know what's going on. And it's really revealed in this episode.
Yeah.
This is when we truly see. Now, each and every episode, Hannibal has become less hidden to, yes. I guess, to the uninitiated.
And now Hannibal's getting his breakfast scramble.
his breakfast scramble.
Protein scramble. Which we saw.
All his meat is out there
Which we saw on a menu.
We did see a protein scramble, and we got very excited about that.
And you were like, ooh, it's a Hannibal.
Like, we should order that. It might be people.
It might be people.
There's another thing I want to address here, and I'm curious what you two think about it, is this show does not have a lot of women on it.
No.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
No.
And conspicuously, two of its women were missing this episode. Beverly Katz was referenced. She was off in court.
Oh, that's right.
And Alana, just not around.
No. And that's rare.
Especially in the aftermath of the last episode.
But we do have Abigail, and we do have...
Well, that's what I'm saying. We have Dr. DeMaurier.
Yeah, she does make...
And Freddie Lowndes. I know you're trying to ignore Freddie Lowndes.
Who's apparently not dead yet.
The Freddie Lowndes death clock is still hovering around 11:59.
Freddie Lowndes.
Yeah. I keep hoping.
And yeah, well, do you think she's just going to, you know, like, slip in the shower? Like, it's going to be some sort of Final Destination thing? Like,
I don't care how it happens.
You just hope it happens.
I want her to
see it.
I want her to be so rude that Hannibal just can't. can't help it. And she's so rude, he won't even eat her.
he'll feed her to the other people. Like he'll kidnap people and then feed them Freddy and then eat them.
And then eat them.
Or just make her the pig food.
Yeah,
oh,
true.
Yes.
Yeah. His
that's
rarefied
true.
Pig.
His rarefied pig.
I don't think it was actually his rarefied pig, but he could call his farmer and say, I've got the best feed for
got
you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should talk about the episode.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
But what do you think about the lack of female parts and the lack of juicy things for most of them to do? With the exception of Casey Rawl, we really don't get in depth with any characters. They're sort of tertiary supplements to the main cast. Dr. Du Maurier doesn't function as a character. She functions as a plot point.
It's true.
It's awesome.
She's
wonderful because it's Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't Gillian Anderson, if it was someone without as much gravitas, she'd just be a plot device.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, that character is just sort of like our magnifying glass onto Hannibal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
You know, it's where we get to put the, let's hold the glass up and really get to see what's going on here, because the character is not going to reveal this stuff.
She still kind of speaks in these riddles. And mm-hmm. they're not necessarily riddles that you don't understand. It's just she's very closed and closeted about her parent.
Tell me about your
patient.
Parents.
Her patient confidentiality. She definitely has, when Jack comes to speak with her, this kind of barrier mm-hmm. of protection.
She really throws it up when Jack shows up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. She seems almost as if Jack were being rude.
But Jack was pressing for things that she wasn't comfortable with.
That's mm-hmm. true.
And he was playing games with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And being very aggressive, but sort of not being aggressive in a violent way, but in a threatening way.
Jacking
and the
up
way
along.
He kept kind of pressuring her
to reveal
things.
Yeah.
And I think that she has information. Exactly. Yeah. Need a shirt. I think she is a great keeper of secrets in more than we know, than we could possibly. We may know at some point, but I think there's a reason why Hannibal talks to her.
He knows the insights into him are reasonably safe mm-hmm. with Dr. Du Maurier.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, women representation, I feel like there's very little, besides Jack being overtly masculine, and we have Alana, who is almost overtly feminine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that, to me, Hannibal portrays kind of an asexual...
Yeah, I agree.
...otherworldliness that he's not...
He doesn't appear to be a person.
Right.
Yeah. And then we have Will, who's just so confused about himself, and
sure.
the little interest that he shows in Alana is fleeting, and it's short, and I'm mm-hmm. sure he carries it with him, as the character would, but it doesn't get put out onto the screen as often, and I almost feel like he's got more like a feminine attribute.
Well, no, I agree with that, and I think a lot of the characters do have this fluidity to them, and I think that's to be credited to Brian Fuller, who has said that he designs characters, not genders.
Right. Mm, yeah.
But at the same time, one of the biggest criticisms that's been leveled against Hannibal in the second season is that its female characters don't have a lot to do, and the male characters do. And if you look at Red Dragon, the female characters have very little to do.
Oh, very little to do.
Until the climax.
Yeah.
Or to be the trap.
Yeah, or to be the trap.
The trap or the victim.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's true.
Thomas Harris, I think, was also experiencing some of that criticism with Red Dragon and then tried his best to turn it around by mm-hmm. introducing Clarice Starling.
Right.
Right.
And have a strong female lead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also may have been a product of the time, too. We have to remember how long ago, Red Dragon was written. And if you look at every, cop TV show and every movie that was out at that time, there was a dearth of female characters just because it's a cop show.
Maybe it's just that he turned Freddie Lowndes into
Freddie
Lowndes, a female.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, Alana was a male character.
Yeah,
originally.
Alana was too. And Alana, no, that's a good switch. But I feel like this episode, it was conspicuous to not have Alana.
It was a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, really, in the previous Leon, because it's been a while since we recorded, in the previous Leon, you see the last thing you see is Alana looking out her window and seeing Will kill.
That's true. Yes. That's true.
Eddie Izzard.
Well, and also you have to keep in mind she may not have been available for this episode.
Well, that's very true.
As an actor,
no, and I get the television reasons.
Yeah,
like I'm sure Beverly's not in it because they paid her for a certain number of episodes,
exactly.
And this is not one of them.
Exactly.
But from a character standpoint, it just felt a little odd.
Right. Especially what was going on, the whole thing of Will coming out of the hospital, taking Abigail to, back to Minnesota.
Because Beverly would have wanted to be involved.
There are things here that, and Alana,
right.
too. I think all that stuff with him that he was doing seemed like Alana would have stepped in or been involved, or he would have talked to her at some
Jack would
point.
Have called Alana.
Right.
The moment
or they would
Will
have had
takes,
to, okay, we have to have that talk because there's something
or,
wrong
or
with
Or when Will... I mean, he's there in the hospital with Georgia. You would have thought just by the fact that he was in the hospital, Alana might have showed up.
Sure,
and then
yeah.
after they're both in the hospital together and Georgia dies, maybe Alana might want to be there, like, to just check on has he cracked? Did this push him over the edge? Like, what
there
is
were
he going
suspicious gaps.
Through? Because she was obviously concerned about him being unhinged.
Yeah.
Mm.
That is apparent.
Let's talk Georgia.
Okay.
Yes.
Our other female in
our
the episode.
Our other female.
Who is dispatched before the opening credits.
Yes.
True.
So, Georgia in the chamber. First of all, it was nice to see Georgia out of creepy makeup.
Right.
She still
like
had
a person.
The skin missing from the elbow
to the
wrist.
Yeah.
Which was disturbing in my brain. But.
Yeah.
But there was a nice exchange between her and Will. About mental illness and about Will hoping that they figure out was it something beyond his fever, where she says they won't find anything, they won't find out what's wrong, they'll just know you're wrong.
Which seems to be Will's main fear
is that other people, you know, he won't be able to control himself, but that other people will know or feel this way about him. Like, Alana will think he's crazy. Jack will think he's crazy. He won't be able to blend.
Yeah.
And
he already has trouble with not being able to blend, and then this is going to blow that out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to see that reflected in Georgia, it's sad and rough for him.
Yeah. I mean, she talks about some pretty heavy things that, you know, when she gets past you, do I look like I'm alive.
Yeah, do I look alive?
But
and then he says, "You look pretty."
Yeah.
A nice little moment.
I know, which
was
there really
was a
sweet.
Few moments of Hugh Dancy sort of playing this vulnerable. Am I okay? Do you like me? Kind of
right.
role. You know, he does it. I can't think of the other moment. I'm sure I'll find it in the notes. But here, when he says, "You look pretty," it was when he asked Abigail if she wanted him to take her to the mountain.
Oh, yes, because that was
for
her mother's birthday where they're going to hike the mountain.
It's almost a, I'm alive, I'm okay, I can do things.
Yeah.
Do you want to do things?
Yeah. Even though when he says it, he can barely get the sentence out.
Yeah.
Because he's still, you know, kind of not, he's off kilter still from his previous episode, but it is just like he reaches out to sort of have this tender moment.
He's trying to make connections.
You know, if you want to do that, I could maybe go do that with you.
When I think he's trying to make connections as he sees his connection with Hannibal falling apart. He, you know, in the last episode, he's starting to see real cracks and Hannibal withholding information from him.
Well, I mean, Hannibal, speaking of Georgia, is, you know, convincing Will that his dementia could cause the fever.
Yeah.
That, you know, actual psychological episodes or episodic psychological mental behaviors can manifest physically and show the things that he's been having, loss of time and the fevers that have been racking his body. And then it's, we've got Hannibal getting really interested in George's recovery.
Yeah,
which mm-hmm. you know it is unsettling to us as viewers. But I'm wondering how Will is analyzing that, because what other than his friend, the neurologist, being supposedly killed by her, it just seems really weird for him to have that kind of interest.
I think Will is still to the point of,
like, just doesn't get it.
Hannibal's reason for being interested in Georgia could very well be because Will is interested in Georgia, because Will sees these parallels.
Right. Mm.
So Hannibal could be using Georgia metaphorically when he talks about mental illness.
Okay.
That's true. You know, Hannibal really is twisting the knife in this scene, this breakfast scene here, by saying nothing is more isolating than mental illness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yes, we know, I know, but thanks for mentioning that, mm-hmm. Hannibal. And did you notice the duplicated shot from the pilot where they're eating breakfast? It's almost exactly mm-hmm. the same. It's that far away, they're in front of the window, Hannibal's on the same side, Will's on the same side. And now they're having breakfast in Hannibal's little Uber containers. Tupperware.
Yeah,
you know, it's Uber. better than the Tupperware us mere mortals have.
Uber Tupperware.
Oh my goodness.
But I do want to go back before this, because the end of that scene with Georgia mm-hmm. was Georgia talking about not wanting to remember what she did. Yeah. Neil mm-hmm. saying, you know what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she doesn't remember. She dreamed that Will killed the doctor but couldn't see his face.
Yeah.
And so that's a telling moment, because Georgia is very much aware that she killed her friend.
Yes.
She doesn't really recognize it beyond that, but she knows she did it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For her to not know she did this thing that it's expected she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Will, it's another one of those, did I do it?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a red flag that goes up. And speaking of red flags going up, that wasn't a good one.
Red
flags.
Poor Georgia.
Yes.
Poor Georgia.
That is not a
just
way
wanting to
go.
Be pretty.
Oh, no. Everything about that was so painful.
Yeah.
And it we were led into it so slowly and painfully, like, just every moment of that.
Phone.
And that's the thing. She's just told that she's pretty. And she wakes up and finds the comb in there. And that whole thing of, she's having that moment where she's feeling really good. Mm-hmm. And she goes to comb her hair. And then there's the static spark. And we don't get to look away from this.
We don't. We're right there.
Yeah. The hand on the glass.
Oh, that last, like,
last frame, that last moment mm-hmm. of the hand with the whole thing engulfed in flames is just, it's heart-wrenching. And, you know, and especially since it all happened, it's like you can totally see her imagining her that compliment and thinking of that as she's, you know, trying to comb her hair and she's in this isolated chamber and it
brings it's rough.
Yeah.
And that's pre-credits.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a way to introduce the episode right there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a line I thought was interesting. He said, I'm awake and wandering with purpose and good intention.
Yeah, I made a note for that, too. That was when Hannibal comes to see Will.
Yeah. That's all before. Because we visit Georgia, and then Hannibal and Will have their chicken soup conversation, and then
that was pretty cool,
because I think in that conversation is when and this has been happening in a lot of these later episodes, is that people reveal something and then Hannibal sort of subtly tells that person without them knowing it that, well, this person now knows too much and they have to be quickly dispatched,
right?
And I really got that feeling when he was talking to Will in that chicken soup scene that Georgia was not long for this world.
Absolutely.
Because the minute Will tells him that she had the dream and she couldn't see his face.
Yeah.
And there's that moment again, because they're doing a lot of internal moments on their faces and lots of, I was like, that's it. She's dead. She's gone.
Yeah.
Hannibal's like, I can't have her around anymore because she knows.
I wonder if it's intentional on Mads Mikkelsen's part to play so close to that borderline of no emotion. Mm. It's his portrayal of Hannibal, and it's his interpretation. I'm sure he got some sort of information from Brian Fuller on how to play it, but because he rides that line so close, whenever he does give you a bit of information, it's like, you know, it's exactly significant. It's significant. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what it means. It means George is going to die, mm-hmm. and Hannibal's going to do it, and we don't want any loose ends where she could possibly all of a sudden recognize faces again,
right.
have a dream about the doctor, and see it. Hannibal handing knows. Her the scissors, and yeah. then the whole, you know, the whole train set, for a lack of a better analogy, just, you know, crumbles.
Yeah. Well, even the way he's depicted in the books is very similar to the way he's portrayed in that whole, that coolness, that otherworldliness, how he's kind of, every time I read about his presence in a room, there's always this sort of like aloof, you know, like he's always standing in a corner with his back to the room mm-hmm. before he turns and he wows some mm-hmm. people with something, or he does something significant. And I think that sort of downplayed way that he's being played in here is very much in the way Thomas Harris Absolutely. Was writing him.
Mm-hmm. And it's a response to the biggest criticism leveled against Anthony Hopkins, was that he got too big with the performance. Yeah. And so it was like a conscious effort. We're going to go so far mm-hmm. afield from that performance that it's going to be almost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like you have to turn your volume up to hear anything.
Yeah,
it's but true. Then when there's loud, it's loud.
It's loud. Yeah. It's loud.
So I love the lab geeks in this episode.
Yes.
I mean, they're getting
grumpy. Price
and Zeller
are like a great little comedic duo.
They are. They're so great to watch. And together, I love that they're the voice of reason often, too. You know, it's like Jack's going on his tangents, Will's going on his tangents. They were talking about the likelihood of suicide, and there's that back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the scene later, when Jack is talking about, okay, let's try a theory. It sounds more like a hypothesis.
Yeah,
you know,
but when they have the argument about, like, what is a theory and what's a hypothesis. Yeah. They're actually arguing what the word means, mm-hmm. not that the thing itself.
Well, I think,
or really listening to what he has to say.
No, I do feel like these two are probably a little sick of Will Graham's methods.
Probably.
Because they believe in evidence and specifics and following things to logical conclusions. Mm-hmm. And Will, it's been said many times, makes leaps that no one else does.
Right.
And so these two are just often left in the background, just being like, okay, I guess we're going to investigate that batshit theory now.
Right. Why can't science be enough?
And they find the bits of the comb
mm-hmm.
that suggests that Georgia was given
something.
Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a murder instead of suicide, which is what they thought it was initially. But what's interesting is then that's when Will makes that slide into whoever killed Georgia was also the one that killed Dr. Sutcliffe.
Yes.
Was also the one who killed Marissa Shore.
Yes.
It's the copycat because the copycat is not doing things exactly the same. He's doing heightened, elevated versions of it.
He's really starting to connect the dots.
Yeah. Yes. And he's still everything. Not certain what it is.
But he knows there's a connection.
That. Yeah.
There's someone, one person, who is basically just goading everybody on and taking over, like, sort of intersecting between all of this stuff and doing things like
that. And you know who I think it is?
Yeah. Who?
Freddie Lowndes.
Oh.
Come on. Wouldn't it be perfect? Wouldn't that be the perfect serial killer copycat? The person who stands to benefit most from the stories.
It's true, she was trying to get stuff out of, what's his name?
She's using information that she has gathered from everybody else.
Uh-huh. So basically manipulating things so that she gets the story mm-hmm. that she wants. That she's that.
So I'm surprised nobody makes the leap that Freddy is a very copycat. Likely copycat killer.
I guess because I don't imagine
she
her.
She does like to talk about herself as being one of the top psychotics.
Yeah.
That's true. She has kind of a takes one to know one kind mm-hmm. of conversation.
Well, and that's the I've interviewed enough killers to know when I see one.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And what it is,
yeah.
It's a very specific brand of hostility.
Yes.
The kind of hostility that Freddie Lowndes yeah. has in spades.
Yeah.
But what I like about this scene is Freddie is playing all sides.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Freddie's talking to Abigail.
Yeah.
And she's saying, I think we should use my articles as the chapter title.
Yes. And, yes. She's inserting herself in everything.
Totally. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. this is now my project only. I'm going to write your story, but mm-hmm. I'm going
to
write,
you and know. She's trying to help her come up with the book title or... Yeah. So, but she wants to use The Last Victim.
The Last Victim.
That's already been used.
Which has already been a book, which yes. which I
which you own.
Which
have
I
on
can
the shelf.
See. I can see, see yeah. from where I sit. I can see it.
So they can't use that. Yeah, but it is interesting. It's like, you know, they speak with a brand of hostility. You know, and she's the, you know, she also the whole thing of, you know, whoever killed Nicholas Boyle killed an innocent man.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, she's
yeah.
starting to plant the seeds of opening up mm-hmm. all the lies and all of the subterfuge. You know, everyone's basically getting ready
for all
these
Do you think Freddie knows that Abigail killed Nicholas Boyle at this point?
I think she's probably figured
it
out.
Pretty good
she
thing.
Suspects it.
Yeah.
Because she definitely is... confident that Abigail helped her father.
Oh yeah.
She wouldn't be hunting this right. story so hard if she
And
didn't.
Freddie sees this as the best opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
She's going into this book with someone who's trying to prove her innocence, but then halfway through is going to be revealed as one of the killers, and then the book, she can write the rest of the book. She doesn't need access anymore.
Nope. Right.
And Abigail's
all that,
in prison.
All she needs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because she's manipulating things for her own end in a way too. Of she's not going to tell people, well, I know you did it. She's trying to get her to go and goading her.
Yeah,
you know, to give her the reveal because that would
guilty
be
guilty conscience yeah. that'll make her spill her beans.
So Will awakens to creepy moving Georgia, which
yes.
unlike most of the time when this effect is used, I think it was stop motion rather than reverse film. You know, most of the time when you see this kind of herky-jerky movement, mm-hmm. it's someone's walking backwards and then they play it forwards.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, they took still photos of Georgia moving.
Oh, and then
put assembled them in a really herky-jerky stop-motion animation.
Yeah. And it wasn't pretty Georgia. It was,
no.
It was creepy Georgia.
It was
creepy
Georgia with the jaundice and yeah. the sliding skin.
So we go back outside with Georgia, and Georgia says, see.
See.
See. Not sure what she's saying to yeah. see, but then she gets mounted on a rack.
Yes.
So, see this.
Mm-hmm.
And then immolates and becomes the Raven Stag.
Yes.
In this gorgeous piece of
it's
animation
amazing.
Where the Raven Stag shakes off the fire.
The fire, yep.
And it falls like ashes for paper
yes.
ashes.
Just a really great creepy dream.
Well, when we saw Garrett Jacob Hobbs dying and he said see. Will,
mm-hmm.
we weren't really sure what the hell he was telling us to see either.
It's
well,
a recurring...
true, but we are 12 episodes later at this point.
Well, yes.
So hopefully somebody
we're
will start telling
something.
Us what we're supposed
yeah,
to be
exactly.
seeing.
What exactly are we supposed to be seeing here? I can't quite tell. Or it is leading up to something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leading up to some reveal that he is going to see, or all these moments of him hearing see are going to suddenly click all together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Will is starting to be doubted by Jack, Jack was on board for a long time. Team Will is falling apart here, and it's probably because Alana is gone.
Yeah.
He's mad that he was talking to
well,
Georgia
yeah,
in the hospital.
Because Will
shouldn't have even been there.
Talking to her really complicates the case.
Yeah. Right, he was really upset.
Yeah. But then Will was trying to say all her adult life, this woman was misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And what I can make sure is her death isn't misunderstood.
Yes.
Which is Will grasping to one thing he can do. I think. And he doesn't feel in control of anything.
Yeah,
so
almost definitely.
Yeah.
He's convinced that she's been murdered, that there's foul play.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack goes to talk to his fears out with Hannibal,
mm-hmm.
who is the worst person to be dealing with this with.
Exactly.
mental illness is mentioned also in this conversation with Will. He does discuss, are you mentally ill, Will? You know, he directly just, it's no longer something we're tiptoeing around. It's not something that Jack is, you know, mildly concerned with, or I shouldn't say
concerned with.
Anger-cerned,
or in complete denial of. Because before, whenever Hannibal would hint at him being broken and needing time off, or him actually suffering from mental illness, Jack was just like, "Oh no, not my Will. My Will's fine.
Sure.
I don't know who you. Who do you? What are you talking about?
Well, Jack can't ignore it anymore.
The power of denial was so strong, and that denial's breaking down. Because it'll only get you just so far.
And Jack's wondering if the lines are blurring or if Will's actually onto something, because part of Jack's
making connections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's connecting murders that were previously not connected.
Yes, yes. Mm. Like seeing connections where there might not or may not be. However, we are sitting here going, yeah, there are connections. The
you
connection,
should look at that guy in front of you.
Yeah, look exactly. Right in front of you. Like, you're staring at the connection.
You know, what's great, though, is Hannibal is still saying these wonderful things about Will. He's planting seeds with Jack. Mm-hmm. So Jack doubts him. But then at the same time saying, I've only ever known Will to be striving to be his best self. Mm. And it's Hannibal's playing the friendship card while simultaneously digging Will's grave.
Yes.
Very true. Yes. Very true.
And then Jack goes to see Dr. Du Maurier. Mm-hmm. Which is cool because we haven't seen Dr. Du Maurier with anyone else.
Right. Yes. Didn't we have this discussion where...
She never leaves the house.
We wondered if she was real.
Yeah. Well, unless, you know, Jack's hallucinating, she must be
yeah. real. At this point, really, if we had that... We didn't actually have that theory. Mm. None of us believed she wasn't real.
Right. But if you did...
If we had...
Yes.
It's sort of dashed.
It would have been shattered.
Unless, okay. Let's jump down the rabbit hole for a moment. We are talking about how... Brian Fuller wants us to see just what Will is seeing. And Will is losing his mind right now. For all we know, Dr. Du Maurier is somebody he saw in a grocery store, and he's just laying in a hospital bed, hallucinating all these people that he may or may not have made up all on his own. And made up this whole elaborate scheme. I mean, really? Questioning whether or not what we're seeing is real, or if these people... are actually interacting with each other the way we see it. It's perfectly logical to be questioning everything at this point.
Like, sure,
absolutely. Everything.
I guess it could be.
I don't think Brian Fuller's going to pull a Saint Elsewhere on us.
Okay, I'm just saying, but
I mean, it's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, he may be. And then we meet Thomas Harris, the author of. And it was all his books. And then he dies. And then he's reanimated by Lee Pace. You like that?
Yes. Yeah. I do.
So let's not go too far down that rabbit hole.
Well, okay, let's come,
but no, it's a cool theory.
Come back to where we are. I was just saying, Dr. Du Maurier, not being real, perfectly plausible hypothesis.
Absolutely.
Because of all the other things we know we've seen that are not there. Like, we know for a fact, or at least I do, in my mind, from my experience in biology, the raven stag is not a real thing.
Not a real thing.
Not a real thing.
But directly something that Will is seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Repetitively.
So let's sashay past that and talk about the fact that Jack admits to doubting Hannibal, which is a first here.
Yes.
And sort of pushes Dr. Du Maurier, who, again, really feels like she may be agoraphobic.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't go anywhere near him. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to interact with him. She's cool, but then she's drinking wine immediately. We talk about the patient that attacked.
Yes.
Yes.
Former patient of Hannibal's was referred to Dr. Du Maurier, that's suspect. Patient swallowed his own tongue while attacking. And as fans of Thomas Harris, we know that Hannibal has a penchant for convincing people to swallow their own tongues. He did it to multiple Migs in the next cell after he disrespected Clarice Starling. So somebody disrespected champagne showers. Somebody disrespected Dr. Du Maurier. Hannibal sent him over and convinced him to swallow his tongue.
Mm.
That's what I'm thinking. I don't actually know.
I'm on the same page with you there. I do believe that that is what happened to Dr. Du Maurier's patient. I feel like there's a whole lot more that's unspoken around that situation.
Yes.
But I do feel that those are facts.
But it's nice to get some more information on this.
True.
Right.
True, because it hasn't yet been explained until Jack questions it and brings it up.
And it's Jack has been doing this basically from the beginning, this whole thing of... He's, still trying to find an answer, and it really comes out in all of his conversations with Du Maurier and with Will and everybody. It's like he's putting things together, and he wants to let everybody know, I'm onto you.
Mm-hmm. He's just pointing blindly at people. I'm onto you.
I'm onto you. Yeah, because it seemed like every conversation he had, especially right, with Jack and with Abigail and with everybody else, it's like he so wants to. I know that you're in. That you've done this. I know what's going on here, even though he's just grasping.
He has a bit of that bureaucrat thing where he needs to close the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he also, he's a really good agent, and he's got good instincts, and he's a good man.
Mm-hmm.
But he's unhinged in this situation, and he's still dealing with his wife's cancer at this point. We've seen the seasons change.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, theoretically, Bella is in her chemo.
Yes,
she
did decide no chemo.
That's right,
so Bella's just disintegrating in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all happening as subtext, mm-hmm, off camera. So he's really, really trying to hold on to things. Mm-hmm. And Will is flipping out.
Mm-hmm, totally flipping out.
Beverly's going to trial somewhere. Alana's on vacation. I don't know. What's he supposed to do? I like complicated patients are conducive to complicated relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Du Maurier's line about, seems to me that Will Graham would do well to have more friends like Hannibal.
Yes.
It's so weird, because you really do get the feeling that Dr. Du Maurier knows about Hannibal, at least knows what he is, if not specifics.
Right.
Well, she also really feels that Hannibal wants good things for Will.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we're all not convinced of that over on this side of the pond.
Well, she also may feel like, see how he runs.
Yeah, maybe she's sitting back going, let's just see what to do. Because you know what? I don't ever leave my house. This is the only entertainment I get is when Hannibal comes to tell
me
about
watch
his
television.
Crazy exactly. friend Will.
I just watch what Hannibal's crazy clients do.
Hey, that might be her bag too. That's why they're such good pals.
Mm-hmm.
Or still patient-doctor relationship.
So Will goes to visit Abigail.
Yes.
Yes.
And they talk again about that killing someone was the ugliest thing in the world.
Mm.
Right.
Will and Abigail are talking about how she killed Nicholas Boyle here. And how Will, when he killed Garrett Jacob Hobbs, felt terrified and then powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And then Abigail talks about how it must have felt good to end him.
Mm.
And then that's how she felt with Nicholas Boyle. But then almost admits to killing the girls. Did you think she was just going to go all the way there? Like, there's a lot of implication in that
scene. There is a lot of implication there. But she's kind of also... She's telling people that she's involved, but also trying... Because she does this later with the whole... When they do the whole hunting and mm-hmm. fishing... analogy later on, is that she's in a difficult position, because if she did do what she is suggesting, that she didn't kill these women, but she was the lure.
Right.
So how involved is she in the process of...
Well, she seems to just be revealing little bits of involvement so as to not come right out and say, by the way, I helped my dad kill all those girls.
Also,
I hope you still like me.
Right.
She might be doing a Hannibal move and leaking out little bits of information just to see how...
To serve her purpose.
Oh, to see how...
Well, to see how he's going to react to it. Not necessarily to serve her purpose, but to see, okay, if I let a little bit more out, did you run away? No, you didn't run away. Okay, let a little bit more out. Okay, are you still with me? And then, you know, she's unfortunately didn't get that luxury with Hannibal, and it was just sort of spewed
well,
out
he
there.
Knew.
Well, that is
he knew.
Something we do find out.
Yes.
We find out that he was playing her also to see what she would do when faced with, you know, somebody who wasn't even attacking her, was going to try to just talk to her because he was being...
Not just see what she would do. He hoped she would do it.
He did hope.
Which was... That's a rough
she
thing.
Would
I
kill.
Mean, he's curious. But he also has high hopes for what people will do.
Hannibal hoped that she was involved in the killing of those girls.
Because it makes her more interesting.
It does. It's something...
Victims are uninteresting, inherently.
Right.
Victims are just victims.
Right. But he tells her she's not. She's a survivor.
Right. Yes.
He knows that she's a survivor. Just like him.
So Will wants Abigail's help. In catching the copycat. Then we're back with Dr. DeMaurier.
Yes.
And Hannibal.
And Hannibal gazing out the window. And
yes.
I like that. And it's like, you know, a guy came here today.
Yeah.
And
I'm looking for you.
She's really firm with Hannibal.
Very much.
You know, whatever you're doing with Will Graham, stop.
Yep.
Exactly.
Did either of you notice that they refer to Will Graham almost exclusively as Will Graham in this episode?
No.
Garrett Jacob Hobbs. And
but they do that often.
But it was, I thought it was interesting.
That in this
episode, in this particular, I think some of the writers just like full names.
Yeah. Because I now that I think of it, it's like there are times where he's called Will, but usually when they're discussing his breakdown or what he's doing, they do have a tendency to use his full name. But it is, I never made that connection to the, you know, that the, you know, like the, he sounds like a serial killer when I say his full name.
Right. There was a line in this scene so good that all of us wanted to write it down. That you cannot act as an agent of friendship to a man disconnected from the concept, as a man disconnected from the concept. So Hannibal can't be Will's friend when he doesn't understand friendship.
Yes.
And this is another scene where you really see Mads Mikkelsen doing something different.
He's
agitated by the suggestion, as well as mentions of the attacks. I mean, he's visibly uncomfortable and angry.
You definitely see that. Most definitely.
And I love that at the end of the scene, after being uncomfortable and angry and her telling him how she feels, he sits down and is basically like, okay, now I'm ready for therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's he's retaking control. Then you go right to the, after commercial, we go right to a scene with Will and Hannibal, where Hannibal's sitting in the same seat as he was with Dr. DeMaurier, and Will is on the other side. And Will is finally thinking clearly about the copycat, which, for Will, thinking clearly
is amazing.
Is impressive.
Yes.
And he realizes that the copycat wasn't planning to frame Georgia Madsen. He was planning to frame Will instead. And says it was someone at the bureau, someone who has information. And then here's where Hannibal is like, well, maybe you did it. I feel like Hannibal is, you know, Will is playing big unhinged. I feel like Hannibal is very much unhinged in this episode because he's throwing everything out. He's throwing out things to Jack, conflicting information to Will, conflicting information to Abigail. Yeah. He's lying to Dr. DeMore. I mean, he's just like, okay, things are falling apart. Mm-hmm. What can I do to tread water?
A little longer here,
And to see someone panicking so calmly.
So calmly.
It's
it does
fascinating.
Very calmly.
Yeah.
So then we're back with the lab geeks, which I love Jack's lab geeks because they can find out any piece of information. Oh. They can use any system and get the information. They found out that multiple tickets were bought for hotels, dinners for two, and that all the girls were taken when Abigail Hobbs was doing her orientations for colleges. So she is very definitely involved, and here is that Abigail is the copycat because she has a taste for it, mm-hmm. and she wants to impress someone. And when they go to arrest Abigail, instead they find Freddy.
Yes.
And this is where Freddy's just like, yeah, whatever, Abigail killed Nicholas Boyle, I know, whatever. I know what killers look like. Why don't you?
Yeah, yeah. She definitely doesn't want to be. It's in a way similar to how Chilton would kind of that is sort of like indignant. I figured it out before you did, so I'm not going to play. I'm going to take my ball and go home. You know, I know what's going on more than you do. They do kind of play a similar role.
It's a shame you FBI guys aren't solid on this.
Yeah, yeah. And that I know more than you. I have better connections than you.
I mean, Freddie, as irritating as she is, was sparingly used in this episode. I mean, I understand your desire to see her killed.
Hard okay. side.
I mean, really, I think there's nothing Miko wants more from this season finale than to see Freddie Lowndes maybe get set on fire.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Anything at this point. I'd be happy with anything.
You know, telling Freddy to maybe she better leave before someone drops a house on her.
Yes.
it's funny. Your hatred of Freddy is pretty epic.
It is.
And I'm enjoying it thoroughly because I also hate Freddy.
There's just nothing.
Nothing redeemable.
Nothing redeemable.
Not a single redeemable character trait.
Well, it's that she's completely out for herself. Because even Hannibal...
Nothing's redeeming.
Even the monster at the center of this series is not entirely out for himself.
Mm.
He is very experimental. His relationship with Will, his friendship, does not have the value that you hope friendship will have. But it's still friendship.
It probably has enough for him.
Yeah.
You know, if he has an awkward relationship with people, if he has, you know, difficulty, you know, I can kind of see, you know, it working that way.
Yeah. Here's another scene where Hannibal's throwing people under the bus. Jack goes to visit Hannibal to ask, how the hell did Will take Abigail away? Hannibal talks about Will being a victim of many irrational thoughts, which is a lovely sentence by itself. And then he reveals he's been losing time. And when Will has seemed confused, it may be because he was just waking up.
Exactly.
And Ben, basically, Hannibal's just like, you know, I don't know. Maybe Will's the copycat. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just Hannibal Lecter.
Right.
I don't understand.
This stuff just happens around me. I don't get involved.
Yeah, like, I don't know how I ended up killing Tobias in my office.
Right. Yeah.
And Franklin would just happen to be dead on the floor with his neck snapped.
I don't know. And that's something that Jack mentioned to Dr. DeMaurier earlier in the episode. Like, you know, it's also happened that other patients of Hannibal have gotten violent and then wound up dead.
Hmm. Funny that.
But I love the little exchange where Hannibal's like, didn't you think you should have mentioned this? It's like, and Hannibal's like, oh, I only just found out. It's like, well, unless you just found out before I walked through your door, you probably should have mentioned it. But then Hannibal digs at Jack. Like, well, I didn't mention it because I didn't know if it was your fault, Jack.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, this is just... He's spewing things on... it's like, okay, well, if I could make Jack feel bad for himself, maybe he won't notice that I'm a monster.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all subterfuge.
Yeah, I'm not the monster.
It's smoke and mirrors at this point.
And he reminds him by playing that recording of when Will said, I felt like I killed Marissa Scherer.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
And, I mean, that is damning.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the heels of Will feeling like he killed Georgia Madsen's friend.
Yes.
And so it's all this is adding up to Jack as being, there's very few options left.
Right.
And it is looking very likely that, and the little, you know, Will was supposed to be in his hotel, but I knocked on his door and I didn't hear anything.
Anything, yeah.
It's I mean, if Jack was thinking clearly, he would see right through this.
Right, right.
But he's not, because he's freaked out that Will is going nuts. Will stole his number one, his prime suspect. And then Hannibal also is like, oh, yeah. And by the way, Will said he felt like he was becoming Garrett Jacob Hobbs.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a big thing.
It's funny. It is. Like, that's what I said. It's like, once he realizes that he, that it's not in his best interest to hide the information, he spills it like a slot machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And just
like patient-client privilege.
Yeah.
Patient-doctor privilege.
Yeah. Which DeMaurier is hiding behind.
Privilege.
Yeah.
With each other.
With each other.
Wow. Yeah, and DeMaurier.
Yeah, DeMaurier is hiding behind that, whereas Hannibal is kind of offering it up. It's like, well, you know, he did kind of say to me that. Yeah, but it's also.
But I can tell you, Jack. Right.
Right.
I can tell you.
Hey, this is just between us, buds.
Yeah, we've had.
We both care about Will.
Yeah. Brandy together.
Yeah, we've had brandy by the fire.
By the fire together.
Would I lie to you?
To you, exactly.
If Alana were here, she'd say Hannibal has no reason to lie.
To lie, exactly.
But what? At the end of this scene, this was the moment that made me really want to talk about Mass's performance in the episode.
Okay.
Because at the end of this scene, when Mass says, I'm so sorry, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it simultaneously made me think of the 10th Doctor.
Oh,
but then
I'm
also,
sorry.
As soon as Jack leaves,
mm-hmm.
Hannibal's entire face changes. Mm-hmm. And he's proud of his performance. He's like, yeah, I played the hell out of that. And it's so cold and so distressing.
There's a lot of great moments like that.
Yeah, silent, quiet things.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah. Is him silhouetted or him... Yeah, oh yeah, most definitely. They really got that down in this episode. And I have been enjoying, like I said, this, it's subtle but rich all at the same time, what he's doing.
I mean, I've never seen an actor do something like this. Mm-hmm. You know, most actors have to, they don't start at zero.
Mm-hmm.
They start at five and it's subtle.
Yeah.
Oh, what a subtle performance. Mm-hmm. He's so subtle that you may initially think he's not performing.
Right, but he's actually doing a lot.
Wow, he's kind of bland. But then when you watch it and really get into it, it's so rich and interesting. I mean, he's playing it like a very good steak.
Oh.
Yeah.
It doesn't need all that marbling.
Nope.
No.
He's just fine with a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just the right temperature.
Exactly.
Perfectly on both sides. Just a little bit of salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Now I'm hungry. Okay, go ahead.
Let's get steak.
Now I want steak.
So,
that would go well with this wine.
It would go very well with the wine, which is very good. And I do like a good Malbec.
Mm-hmm.
So let's slide into our climax.
Yeah, because,
So Will and Abigail are on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the want to climb the mountain with mom thing.
Yes.
And I really start to wonder if Abigail is being the sociopath, or if this is a glimpse of actual Abigail. Is she playing Will at this point because she sees the net closing in?
Mm.
Or she actually remembering, oh yeah, I was going to do this thing with mom, and by the way, I am a little girl.
Right.
And sometimes I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen this from her before. And, you want to give her the benefit of the doubt that she isn't the sociopath.
Right.
But she's very clearly involved in all this stuff. So there is that.
There's a great moment. When, can't remember if it was before or after she talks about the climbing the hill with her mother. When she says, it is. It has to do with that, now that I think of it. Because he then tries to reach out in kind of like that fatherly way of, oh, I can take you.
Yeah.
And now that I think of it, because we discussed this earlier, what came across to me when he said that was that he was grasping at that fatherly quality that he and Hannibal were trying to take with her. Mm-hmm. How they were like, well, she only has us now.
Right.
Right, we're the only ones
and
who can help.
We're the only ones. So that's what I felt he was doing. Because he's struggling. His eyes are fluttering. Mm-hmm. You can tell he's on the path of having...
And he's sucking pills out of the bottle again.
Totally. you know, and then he offers, and she's like, no, it probably would just make me sad, and that some places are stained now.
Yeah.
Some people, too. I know I am.
I know. That I wrote that down, too.
That
is a lovely line.
Yes.
And it's one of those lyrical lines that the show does so well, mm-hmm. because it takes a complex and heady thought, mm-hmm. And boils it down to something that's very understandable, but at the same time, lyrical and beautiful.
Oh, exactly.
Expression.
It just sounds beautiful when it comes out of them. And a lot of their whole exchange in this, when they go back to the house and the cabin and everything, because the whole discussion of whether do you hunt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, I fish.
And I fish. And then they have this entire discussion of what is
the difference between, and the fishing is luring,
mm-hmm.
and it's revealing to Will what he already knows, mm. you know, and I think it's the thing he's been trying to not know.
Mm.
And once he realizes it, this is when he has that great breakdown moment.
Oh, yeah.
And realizes Hannibal has known about it already.
Mm-hmm.
And because Abigail says, did Hannibal tell you?
Yes.
And he's like, no, he didn't.
Oh, yeah. He totally, you could tell. It was like,
and that was the moment of betrayal.
He knows? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that the betrayal led to Will mounting Abigail.
Oh, that is such a scary moment.
Yeah. Did you think it was real?
I thought it was real. Because when he did it, I was like, oh, okay, this is over. How is he going to hide this?
Yeah.
How? I really did think it was real. You only get to think it's real for like 10 seconds, because then
right.
they do the jump cut and we turn and we see her standing there.
I actually wish they had played it differently. I wish he had actually, and then he jumped and woke up.
Oh, that we had more time where we believed it.
So we thought it. But, I mean, it was a wonderful sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get Abigail talking about how you're still sick,
mm-hmm.
you know, and rushes away. But before she goes, she says that I think you are the copycat.
Mm-hmm.
And so Will gets to process that. Then loses time and winds up
alone
on the plane. Alone.
Yeah. Alone, that is just landed in Dulles.
Everyone's disembarked. He's the only one sitting there. And he's like, Did I have a girl with me?
I don't know.
Everyone's off the plane.
And that's a frightening moment, because mm-hmm. you have no idea what Will is actually capable of mm-hmm. when he loses time. You know what his mind is capable of.
Yeah. That's true. That is very true.
So, the final scene of the episode. The final scene of Abigail.
Because she goes back to the house.
She goes home, yeah.
And there.
And Hannibal's waiting in the kitchen mm-hmm. for her.
And how interesting to see Will try to clumsily reach out in that father-like way and fall completely flat and actually, you know, basically, well, that'd be worse. You know, that'd make me feel really sad. And then Hannibal's embrace.
Yeah.
It was very unsettling. Because when he hugs her, he seems rather sincerely protective of her
mm-hmm.
in that moment. But you know, it's not real in the sense that I don't know. I had a moment. It's like, okay, is this where he brings her kind of into the fold, or this is I know that you know kind of moment.
Yeah.
Because that does happen.
Sure. Yeah.
But I wonder.
So now we're sharing
this knowledge. Right, we're sharing this knowledge. And is that going to bring us together and bond us? But then you realize that that's the one thing about Hannibal is that he's merely observing. He is not bonding.
And he's throwing stuff out that isn't true again.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't tell Jack that Abigail helped.
Right.
But he tells Abigail.
Oh, and he's totally making it up that she's a wanted person.
And they'll arrest her.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen,
find you.
Abigail.
Yeah.
You will get found, and you will get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks if Will did the copycat,
mm-hmm.
and they will believe he did.
They will believe he did, yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is chilling.
Mm-hmm.
But then we go back to the beginning, where why did you call the house? And it's because
that is a wonderful moment, because she starts to back away.
Yeah,
she was like, "Well, Will said that the killer, the serial killer, is the one who have placed the phone call. And she says that, and all this stuff happens where she's, and then as she asks him, well, why did you call the house? She's backing away. You know, it's sort of like you could see the process going on. And then he realizes that he can't.
And this sequence is shot in that same sort of washed out, backlit way, you know, so we're sort of seeing this hazy dream of a last moment here.
That whole, I think that entire interior, all the interiors of the house at the end are done sort of with with like a filter. Everything seems sort of hazy. Yeah, that's true.
It's Abigail's house.
Yeah.
So it everything was covered. They had a lot of things that were put away and boxed up.
The head?
But it was like in soft.
Well, I think it was.
Focus.
I think it was an entire deer head on the counter.
There
behind.
Was.
Yeah, but I noticed antlers there.
I just noticed antlers right behind. Mm-hmm,
right behind.
Abigail's
and immediately
head.
You wonder, okay, now
too.
is Hannibal going to pick her up and go put her on the antlers?
Yeah. Right. Well, go ahead.
The big reveal here is that Hannibal is admitting that he has killed many more people than Garrett Jacob Hobbs.
Yes. More than him.
Many more than your father. And to admit that to someone is like, okay, and now it's time to die.
Oh, when he said that, that's, again, that whole thing.
It was like a weird, tender, sweet touch of the face. Where he apologizes.
Well, he says sorry.
Her.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I
wasn't
protect
able
you
to
in
protect
this life.
You in this life. Mm-hmm. And it brings back the little sister for me.
Oh, Misha. Yeah.
Where he wasn't able to protect her in her life.
Well, do you think Hannibal really regrets that it has come to this with Abigail?
I think so.
Oh, sure. I'm sure he would have loved to continue to see what she did for
kind
longer.
Kind of how he keeps saying that. Well, I did that because I wanted to see what you would do. That was, and I think maybe in that moment of having that tender, somewhat oddly tender moment of hugging her, that's less of a welcoming in and more of a farewell. It's like, I think he did wish that this would, sort of like he wants Will to be around for a while. He's not setting these people up that he's really interested in to destroy them. It's the boring people is who he gets rid of right away.
Though.
Or the rude.
That said, I think what we're seeing in this episode is more self-preservation, Hannibal.
That's true.
Because the closer they get to the copycat, the closer they get to Hannibal.
Right.
Will thinking clearly about the copycat is the worst possible thing for Hannibal to hear. So I think we're seeing a little bit of a different version of Hannibal, and I think that's why the performance stands out as different, because before we're always seeing the curious Hannibal.
Right.
And ultimately,
now we're seeing
the guy who doesn't have a lot of stakes, Hannibal. But now there's stakes because
we're seeing
if
defensive
he doesn't
Hannibal.
Yeah, if he doesn't wrap this up now, it could get much bigger. It could become okay, you did it, Hannibal.
Right.
Nobody has yet pointed the finger at Hannibal.
True.
Which is interesting.
There is some
suspicion. He's prepared
he's
for that.
Being suspected.
Jack is definitely concerned, but I think Jack is leaning towards Will. And Abigail's the only one who's ever seen Hannibal. And you play the
man
who called
the house.
Yes,
that was a great...
I mean, it's intense and weird that she's the only one who can see it. And it's curious if the reason she can see it is because she's so intimately familiar with a killer, with her father.
That's true. And she has, it's not just a connection to it, but she's lived it.
Yeah.
So that would change her her perspective on
all of this. She spent
too much time
amongst killer.
And
then hung out with Will for a while, you know.
Right.
And,
so all
and
around,
sociopath Freddie Lowndes.
Yeah, she hasn't hung out with anybody of any real redeeming
really,
quality.
Really, she should hang out
point.
With Alana more, because she'll just keep giving her clothes and gift cards.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Everyone
shopping.
Else is giving her trauma and tragedy, but Alana just wants to give her iTunes
just
gift
wants
cards.
To go, just wants to go shopping.
I'm not going
to
be using these. You use them.
Yeah. Well, I get this stuff all the time. Like, can I have a friend like Alana where I just get,
Just gift cards.
Gift cards.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
I've been sitting around that she never uses. Okay, I could use those.
Miko, cards. I know you don't want to do this.
Oh. Well,
I know you don't.
You said earlier you were going to do this, and I told you. And,
oh. I want to talk about where it's going. Oh. I mean, it's got to... You've got to have some thoughts. I mean, I do... And I know where it's going, and I'm thinking, my mind is spinning as where this episode could lead. It's like time travel, okay? I know what's going up to here, okay?
Right.
And so it could branch off this way, or it could branch off this way. I don't know.
You only know to that
one. All I know
point.
Is what we know so far, and I'm maintaining that. How about Abigail? Are we done?
It's funny because that's the cliffhanger.
That is the cliffhanger.
At the end of the episode.
And if you're going into Hannibal's warm, loving, cold, devilish embrace.
Oh, and that whole thing. Oh, and he touches her face so tenderly while he's basically saying, I can't protect you anymore. You know, I can't protect you anymore in this life. It was sort of like, because you have not painted a more obvious picture that this is like her... Her last month, and she knows, and that whole thing of him touching her cheek and her mouth, it's oddly intimate, mm-hmm. which makes it even more disturbing that it's fatherly protectiveness, but the way he's touching her
but
is
it's
not,
also lover.
Yeah, he's not touching her in a fatherly way. Yeah. And not that I'm seeing, he's not touching her like in a pervert, you know, what, or anything.
Ah, Hannibal, like, you perv,
you know. There's no, like, there's no child abuse going on here.
Don't worry, we're on the same page. Don't worry.
But it is, like I said, oddly intimate, like you said, in more of a lover way than it is a fatherly way, even though the words that are coming out of his mouth seem fatherly if you didn't know that not being able to protect her means she has to die.
Right.
So it's kind of like how it's been going when he's... There are points where I see a certain expression on his face. I see him process things, and I know that person's gone. And mm-hmm. I knew Georgia was going to be gone. I do. So I did leave the end of this episode with that feeling of, Abigail, nice to know you. Yeah. But at this
thank
point...
Thank you, Casey Rawls, for a wonderful performance.
This was wonderful. We'll get to see you in the next episode. Hopefully, you're not dead before the opening credits. But I did get the
like Georgia.
Right, exactly.
Hey, Georgia's back.
Oh, man.
Bummer.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe she'll get, you know, to the end of the episode at the very least.
Well, then, but that implication, if she does survive to the next episode, is we get to see Abigail die.
Right. And that's some of the things that were tossed over in my mind when it come to talk about that scene was, are we going to have this, and then are we going to start the next episode, and it's already happened, you know, and we start our next killer of the week scene
is Abigail.
Yeah. You know, so that idea went through my head, but then there's the optimistic part of my personality.
You want to believe that
I want to believe
reconsider?
That they're, well, not, and I wasn't even thinking that he would reconsider, but it's that whole idea of Abigail is not like some of the other people that he's dealt with.
It's right. Very true.
No, she's very unique.
You know, she went through years of living the basically
systematic abuse and
living with a man who is a
and
who
the
is
type of manipulation worse. That possibly Hannibal worse. Is using on people.
Yeah. That she is, out of all the people there, other than Will, thinks most like Hannibal because of the way she was brought up. The whole thing of being the lore and possibly being part of it, and this was had permeated being secretive. And I wanted, a part of me wants to think that that's how she will get out of it, that she will one-up Hannibal. She may not get away with it, but that there's a chance that something will either give her the opportunity to, manage to squirm away from his grip and get away, or convince him of something, or somehow use this part of her that is like Hannibal in a way to, you know, basically zig when he's going to zag.
Right.
You know, that he thinks that, okay, I've got this
piece.
He runs
Serpentine when Hannibal...
Right, Serpentine. Mm. Exactly.
That's how you get away from Hannibal, isn't it?
Yeah, you just run Serpentine. Just run Serpentine. Throws him right off.
Oh, goodness.
He has no idea what to do.
No, he's all like, what's going on?
It's like, stop him!
Yeah.
Then you see the mask come off. Tears. Crying Hannibal.
Crying
Hannibal.
But that's my hope.
That's your hope. Okay.
That is my hope, because it would be really cool if, even for part of an episode, that she's able to sidestep that.
Yeah.
In sort of like a deft, you know, chess move of, oh, this is.
By the way, I told Jack Crawford I was coming here.
Right. Or
I called him.
Yeah. She one-ups him in some way where she gets out of it, or she, you know, is able to give him the slip, or she's able to use something against him in a way where she can outthink him. You know, that would be really, really cool. And I think out of all the people that we've seen, she would be able to do that.
Sure.
So it would be cool if she gets to either live or at least live, you know, another episode. Come on, Freddy's not dead yet. Abigail shouldn't die before Freddy.
That's your benchmark.
Like
right, exactly.
As long as Freddy lives,
right. Abigail should also live.
Okay, I got it. I'm with you.
But again, knowing that this is not the end, and we still have a lot of time that we need to spend with Will and Hannibal.
We
can't lay all the cards on the table at the end of season one, because then you have nothing to do for the rest of however many seasons we have. So the only thing I can say is that I'm predicting a twist. Or is it?
What's a twist?
What a twist!
Yeah,
exactly.
M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Exactly.
Well, remember when I first started talking to you about Hannibal?
Yes.
And I said that season one ends with the most surprising way it could possibly end.
Right.
Because and this is the thing, going into this episode, because we're going into the finale next week, and going into this episode, we are being put in a position as readers.
Mm-hmm.
That we have no idea how they can possibly get out of it. And that's the most surprising thing. And that's why I left this season feeling so strongly about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Is because it did something I totally didn't expect. And that's something that is so rare on television.
It is.
You know, usually you have an idea of where we're going. But not only is this a prequel that we don't have any idea where it's going...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you do that?
Right.
That's why Brian Fuller is magic, which is really what I'm trying to say. And so that's where we're going to leave it today. I'm not going to make you guess anything more.
Okay.
We're going to watch that episode. We'll be back next week with the finale of a spectacular season of Hannibal.
It has been a spectacular season.
And then after that, I want to talk about the season as a whole, now that we will have seen all the secrets that they're going to reveal to us.
That's true.
Then we'll talk about the Blu-ray, because we've been enjoying this season fully on Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray has all sorts of special features and the extended producer's cuts. Like, I'm pretty confident that the fire that started this episode was extended. I'm finding it difficult to believe that that was not extended for this Blu-ray.
Okay.
Because this is a producer cut episode.
Okay, so some of that stuff we may not have...
Because it was very extreme.
Distressingly,
disconcertingly extreme.
And I've said this before, that I'm always stunned knowing this is network television. And how much they are willing to show you.
Yeah.
Because normally on a show like this, the flames would happen and you'd cut away.
And we'd just be pulling back. It's that one shot where we're pulling
back. You might see that hand. You might, but no, you're in there with her,
burning.
And you see her engulfed in flame. You see the torment on her face, and you're like, okay, can you stop? Because I'm starting to feel her pain, and
like,
this is starting to freak
Georgia.
Me out. And then we also get to see her charred remains in all its glory.
Totally.
Several times.
Yeah.
I have to say, amazing special effects.
And I love
staff.
How Will just pulls out the doctor, too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and by the way, boom.
Boom.
Remember this guy?
Yes. Oh, and then they start talking about how the difference between what they what he was trying to do.
See, she just got her face cut open. This guy had his head almost bisected.
Exactly. When they start talking, and you get to see them again, and that, you know, the doctors, you know, just that face having been pulled open again. Amazing special effects. The detail, it's gruesome, but it's not gruesome in a way where you have to look away. It's almost so beautifully done that you're fascinated by it and you can't look away.
Yeah. You know, I have a pitch for a spinoff.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Okay.
Jimmy Price.
Okay.
Serial killer. Like Dexter.
Okay.
Jimmy Price goes and cleans up after all this shit. And kills the bad guys. I want to see that. I want to see that show.
Okay. Well, considering it,
maybe Price and Zeller, maybe both of them.
Yeah. Actually,
a buddy cop serial killer.
I would love a Price and Zeller buddy TV
sitcom.
Show.
They should live together.
They should
be living together.
They're kind of like an odd couple in a
yes.
way. Actually, it was interesting.
And it should be like the price of killers, the price of something with his
something
name.
With his name.
I can do better. I can do better. I'm going to work on that for next week.
One thing I was going to say earlier about, because you were talking about how the what they fulfill their role and how they sort of become this comic
relief. The price of sarcasm.
The price of sarcasm. Oh, there you go. Because he kills, instead of killing the rude, he kills the sarcasm. sarcasm font.
But they're so great together.
I find that how they've evolved to me seems more like these Shakespearean clown characters.
Oh yeah, they're Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Yeah,
exactly. So you're totally getting where I'm going with this.
Absolutely.
That is how
they're commenting on the action,
and that sort of banter, the comic banter that you always, you know, they get to see all, but they're outside of it, and they give you a perspective from. You know, give the audience a perspective of what's going on. But they do it in a way that is funny and lighthearted and has that back and forth. Because they're doing so much banter now.
Yeah. You know. I mean, that's their part, basically. They're banter and then solving the little things.
The little things, yeah.
What I really want them to do is say, so Jack, why do you rack your shotgun?
Before
you go into a place.
Because you know that doesn't
Why
make
do you
sense.
Waste a shell every time?
I can.
Do you have someone following you and picking that shell up so you can use it later?
Use it again.
I mean, really, what's that about?
You just watch too many movies.
Yes, that's what it is. Jack watches the movies. He's like, you know what badasses with shotguns do?
Yeah.
So we're going to leave you there for tonight. You can email us at contact@eattherootcast.com. Check out our Tumblr, which still needs to be stuffed.
It's on the list.
Okay. Eattherootcast.tumblr.com. Follow us on Twitter @eattherootcast. And we will be back next week with the season finale of season one.
Yay!
Thank you for joining us at the table.
Relevé, French ballet.
There we go. Yeah.
Relevé, French ballet.